The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay!
I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G. Tonight I'm joined by at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter.
Yay!
We've also got at agent underscore 70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And as soon as he gets his light bulb fixed,
ah,
we'll have Roddy Cat on the show with us.
Roddy Cat!
I want to remind everyone to go to theclicknation.com where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account at theclicknation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Add us to your Google Plus circles. Just search for The Click Nation. Subscribe to youtube.com/TheClickNation. And you can see all the episodes of Comic Book Chronicles going forward. Also subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Give us those 5-star reviews on iTunes. Give us the thumbs up on Stitcher. Share us so other people can find the show. Use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles on your favorite social media websites. Remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And we are a part of the Comic Related Podcasting Network. Just go to comicrelated.com and Cold Slither Podcasting Network, coldslitherpodcast.com.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into some of the news this week. Pull it up here. Let's see. Gary Whitta moves from Star Wars to Miller World, the spinoff to write the Starlight series movie.
No kidding.
So I guess that was kind of semi-big news. Let's see. Ant-Man's Corey Stoll discusses Yellowjacket's suit. Roddy Cat adds, looks like Superior Spider-Man version of Boba Fett.
No kidding.
Viola Davis is negotiating a multi-picture DC movie deal as Amanda Waller. As Roddy Cat joins the show, give him time to get set up.
Roddy, are you wearing a Jedi robe?
Ha! I wish.
That would be a Sith. That would be Sith robe, wouldn't it?
It would, but I don't. Unfortunately, I don't have one. Yet.
There's a couple actors testing for Cyclops, Jean Grey, and Storm in X-Men Apocalypse. I know the Sansa Stark from Game of Thrones is the one. It's in the hunt for Jean Grey with a couple of other actresses. This was news I enjoyed reading over the weekend. A new animated Vixen series will be coming to the CW Seed, I guess, online network as a part of CW's Arrowverse. That's kind of cool.
Oh, I didn't realize it was going to be on Seed.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah. This is my first time hearing about this and hearing about the Seed. CW Seed.
Well, Seed has traditionally been like shows that weren't quite good enough to be on TV.
Ouch.
So I don't know if that's a symbol of how much faith they have in this cartoon or if maybe they're trying something different in the hopes of getting people to actually watch the stuff that they have on CW.
I think it might be a little bit of both. And there was been some asking about why couldn't it have been a live action series or, you know, because it's like, or even on Cartoon Network or whatever, because I mean you got Teen Titans on there and whatnot, so I don't know.
Keep everything off of Cartoon Network. You don't need them ruining any more shows. What I do,
although I like that preview art.
The preview art looked great. Whether or not the actual product will look the same, of course, remains to be seen.
Well, I mean that's how the animated features generally look, so. I think it's just basically the same Warner Brothers team that's been doing those animated movies on DVD and Blu-ray over the last couple of years. They're going to be handling doing the show.
Yeah.
And if anything, it stays consistent.
I know in the future, in a year or so, there's supposed to be a Static Shock, I believe, some type of animated series. I remember hearing a rumor about that.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was a. I don't know. Remember if it was a series or if it was one of those animated features.
It's like I thought it was a series, but you may be right.
It could be a series. I don't know.
Yeah. But I wonder if they put that on the seed also.
Yeah, time will tell on that one.
Well, is that supposed to be live action? Was it animated or live action?
I want to say live action, but we don't know. Because, I mean, there was somebody who wanted a live action one, I remember. And there was actually a fan-made one that's out already. So it could be conflated with that one, but that's not necessarily the one. I don't know. I can't remember if it was animated or live action.
You always, though, run into that stuff where a show is in development, but in development could mean they've got some guy writing a possible pilot script and some doing some artwork on some Bristol board, and that's as far as it gets, you know, by being in development. So, you know, who knows how far some of that stuff actually gets along, but people like to leak it and announce it and sneak it into Comic-Con anyway, you know?
Speaking of animation, I'm not sure if this is in the news or not, but I believe Justice League Throne of Atlantis is available digitally this week.
No, I didn't put it enough.
So if you are one of the people that hates having physical discs, go ahead and give that a download.
Eclectic?
Yeah, eclectic.
Yeah, really.
I actually was kind of considering it myself.
Yeah, I kind of want to rent it, and I've been seeing little bits and pieces on it. It's being, I can't say it's being reviewed well, or at least, you know, Twittered about well, I guess, but it's kind of half and half.
Yeah. All right, what else we got? So, also this weekend, along with the Vixen series being announced, it was also announced the Flash and Arrow are renewed for additional seasons, along with six other CW shows. That kind of goes in the duh category for me.
Yeah, right.
The Reverse Flash identity was confirmed. We got to look at Firestorm's outfit, a.k.a. hoodie, and talk of an Atom spitoff.
I'm still not convinced about that Reverse Flash reveal. I feel like there's going to be a swerve at some point, but hey.
Yeah. I mean, he could be playing one version of the Reverse Flash, but
yeah,
another one out there.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, especially given the original identity of the Reverse Flash, so.
I believe all those series return next week. At least that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, you're right.
The crossovers between Arrow and Flash are going to be annual.
Which that's almost like a dumb moment also.
Mm-hmm. I also remember reading that some important person over the CBS network was saying that Supergirl won't be a part of that universe or won't be crossing over with those two.
Oh, I think it was the CBS president was like, yeah, we're going to keep it to ourselves for a little bit.
And I saw something about Supergirl's going to be a crime procedural, so it'd be just like everything else. Just like everything else on CBS.
Come on, wait a second.
Welcome home.
Seriously, I did not hear that. That's just sad. Supergirl actually,
they're going to market it, though, as NCIS, but the S at the end.
Marvel is streaming the Japanese Spider-Man series from the 70s.
That's something I actually always wanted to watch. I just don't have the time right now. It's always isn't that the way it works? When it's available, you just don't have the time to watch it. I've always been interested in seeing that.
I want the old 70s ones to come back.
The regular TV shows?
Yeah, the Nicholas Hammond one with Chip Fields and the Jim Rope, as we call it.
Of course!
I just want to see the live-action shorts from the Electric Company.
Oh, man, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I want to see back.
Which I think some of that's on Amazon Prime, but I think this is also along with Electric Company and not necessarily separated.
Yeah.
As Tim thinks, what the hell are they talking
about? Yeah, before the introduction in Spider-Verse, I had never heard of that Spider-Man character before. Gotham cast Rob Gorey as Robin's father, John Grayson.
All right.
Got Marvel releases new swarm of Ant-Man images. Oh, yeah, and we also had a new Avengers Age of Ultron trailer.
Which I mostly missed while I literally walked away from the TV when just before they started playing. I was so annoyed.
Yep, it came on and people squeed.
I had to watch on my phone because I wasn't in front of a TV, but I just found it kind of, it was cool.
Well, at this point, we're the choir and we're being preached to, so there's really not much to get us excited for. You know what I mean?
Well, there was a. They, it showed a couple of things.
Well, there's a. There's one big thing to me.
Yeah, that was kind of exciting about it. But outside of that, yeah, it was just like, yeah, okay, it was more of the stuff we've seen.
There was one big thing that was definitely a teaser for Wakanda, I think.
Yes. Actually, it was I think it was a couple. Cause I'm trying to remember, but yeah. All
right.
Good stuff.
IDW signs with WME for representation, whoever that is.
This has something to do with their film and television projects.
I see.
Yeah.
They're getting on their Boom Studios kick, huh?
Pretty much. So they're trying to get all that aligned.
Gotham, the Scarecrow coming sooner rather than later to the show.
Well, you know, they got to show at least one new villain every couple episodes. You know, one villain every couple episodes. God forbid they do the slow game.
Yeah. It'll be Bruce Wayne's neighbor or something.
You know?
Come over for a cup of sugar.
I just know that they introduced Leslie Thompson.
Yes.
Nice.
Well, actually, wait. Now, okay, I could have sworn she was already on there one time, and then they're just like, I know Marina Baccarin was supposed to be it, but there was also another young lady that also was on there as Leslie Thompson, like a few shows back.
I stopped watching it, so I don't know.
Yeah, but just kind of glossed over that.
Sony says no validity whatsoever to Spider-Man and Avengers rumors.
Lame.
Yes.
They could not work that out.
Well, they just say, and there's not necessarily saying that it couldn't. I mean, that's just keeping people's hopes up by saying that. But, you know, just because Sony's saying there's no validity to it doesn't mean it's not couldn't happen.
Right.
The Flash adds Dexter's Devon Gray as the new Trickster. Tom Hardy is leaving the Warner Brothers Suicide Squad movie because of supposedly scheduling conflict with another movie.
No Deckard Bane.
And Captain America Civil War might explore history between Peggy Carter and Tony Stark.
All right.
That was the cinematic news. So let's see what comic news is out there. Valiant names Marvel veteran Tom Brennan as associate editor. So congrats to him.
Yay!
Diamond announces top comics of 2014.
So will that settle the draft?
No, it won't. We shall find out who won that. Let's see. Brian K. Vaughan says Image is a non-competitive work environment. Duh.
Yeah, right.
Because they're all freelancers, so they own their own work, so there's no competition, really. Image Boom again named Jim Awards Publishers of the Year.
Congrats.
Oh, yeah. Marvel announced the death of Deadpool in the spring.
Yay! Oh.
A death of the year. Every year has to have a death of book.
That's what I'm starting to think.
So, bye-bye, Merc with the mouth.
I'm sure. Yeah, for 3 months, I'm sure.
I was going to say, until his movie comes out, if it ever does come out.
Here's the thing. They just cut his head off, and he still came back around. So, what more could they do to actually kill him?
They could make him physically break the fourth wall.
That's a good one.
I thought Top Cow had already launched their talent hunt.
This might be a new one.
Okay, I'll look at that later.
Yes, that is news for Tim Do Double G.
Yeah, because the one they talked about last year is coming up in March, I want to say.
Or actually, maybe that was the same one.
Maybe they're just reminding people.
Maybe. That the deadline is coming up.
Yeah, because it's been on my mind this week, actually. Let's see. DC released the April 2015 solicits for Convergence Week 2. And probably down farther in the news, I know they've released the covers to the main Convergence series, I believe. But anything Convergence, I kind of like half read because it makes no sense to me.
Mm.
What does it say? Marvel introduces Punk Spider-Man and Spider-Verse and Spider-something mobile game. Agent 70's name is in the sheet, so I can't read the rest of the cell.
Say what?
I guess since you have the cell highlighted, it puts your name in the top right-hand corner, so I can't read all of it.
That's comedy. I will move off it. There you go.
Oh, okay. Marvel introduces Punk Spider-Man and Spider-Verse and Spider-Man Unlimited mobile game. Empire Trade paperback to be released from IDW in April with a sequel on Thrillbent. Is Empire a popular series or something from the past?
I think that's just a Thrillbent series. What's that?
So we're not talking about the TV show, are we?
No, I don't. No.
Its ratings went up this week.
No.
Let's see. Emerald City Comic Con joins Reed Pop family of conventions. Congrats. Marvel plans a Secret Wars kickoff event on January 20th, which is next Tuesday, I believe. So what could they be announcing in Times Square live? You have to tune in to see. Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield are now part of Spider-Verse.
That's pretty funny.
Chris Anka shows art from new Marvel swimsuit book that isn't going forward. I saw some of the images for that. Art was pretty good. Marvel Comics announces end of Avengers and new Avengers.
Yeah, lots of drama in these announcements this week.
Again, not in the not-too-surprising category. Image Comics introduces Image Direct mail order subscription service.
That was pretty big. That's a pretty big step for them, because that's how a lot of people used to get their comics, you know, at least physically.
Yeah. So supposedly the more you subscribe to, the bigger discount you get. I think up to 30% if you subscribe to everything.
Wow.
Not sure why you would subscribe to everything, because you have to pay yearly. So I think it's like if you subscribe to everything, your bill would be like $1,100 or something like that. But at least you got all the comics and you got a discount.
Right.
Not to be outdone, Marvel launches $1 True Believers Best of line.
Who will buy that for a dollar?
Well, it's a couple issue number ones of series and event series for people to jump on.
I mean, if you don't already have these in your in your collection, it's some of this stuff is pretty interesting for a dollar. You know, the first issue of the original Infinity Gauntlet limited series, the first issue of Civil War, the first issue of Planet Hulk. There's some really cool stuff here, I think.
Which made me think of something. Do you remember, what was it, last year, year before last, when they teamed with Comixology and gave away all those number ones that broke the site?
Right.
Which I guess at this point, pretty much everybody's gotten it. I kind of wonder why they didn't do that again, but I guess if they can... get something they would.
You know what? At some of the comic shops that I frequent, I know that the Image number one $1 books that they put out, they sell relatively well. So parents are always looking for something for a dollar for their kids. So don't discount just the price point being a big selling factor.
Well, they could just go back to doing those three books for five plastic bag jobbies they used to have.
$5 foot long.
Bring back spinner racks.
Oh, what? There's no spinner rack in your shop?
I don't know. I haven't been to the shop in a minute. So.
No, no kidding. I still see spinner racks here and there.
Marvel pokes fun at DC. Teases a WTD certified April.
What is that? I missed this. This
came
is
out
new.
Today.
All right, yeah. So like last year, maybe a year and a half ago, I don't remember, DC teased that they were going to do a WTF featured month, and like the gimmick was that something crazy was going to happen in every issue. And
I remember that.
There was backlash against it. A, it was a stupid idea, and B, it's not a good idea to put WTF on comics you want to sell to families. So right. They dropped the whole thing. Well, Marvel just announced that they're doing the WTD, and there are two different rumors. The first rumor is that it's going to be What the Duck, with Howard the Duck variants on a bunch of books. The other is that when the Disney merger was announced, WTD was trending as What the Disney. So it may be a month of Disney variants.
There's also another one from Bleeding Cold, What the Deadpool, which I don't know if they were serious about that, but they kind of put that out there.
I guess that's possible, too. I mean, they're killing off Deadpool, right?
I was going to say, those are all very good theories, and I think any one of them is probably a likely idea. That's pretty it's pretty interesting. WTD, What the Disney, that's the one that really jumps out at me.
What's funny to me is I'm pretty sure most people don't even remember what WTF DC promotion thing from last year. So for them to use that to tease DC, gives the, I guess, fans more credit for their memory than probably I would have.
I think it's more of someone in Marvel just really, like, that really bothered them. They've never been able to let it go. Like, someone really holds on to grudges.
We gotta use this next year, is what they were saying to themselves.
Or they really are planning on using the same book, and they're just like, yeah, they did it, we'll do something like it. I don't know. That'd be dumb, but hey.
All right, let's see. In the variant cover corner, you can check out Phil Noto's Avengers 41 variant. Alex Ross's exclusive Star Wars number one cover from his own store. That's about it.
Yeah.
And let me see if I can find the ad I need to read.
That's ad fun. Break.
Let's see. Actually, I'll just pull it up during the reviews for this week. Who wants to start us off?
Well, no, I was just going to say, just meanwhile, you mentioned earlier that Arrow and Flash are coming back next week. Did anyone happen to catch Agent Carter this week?
I had it on the background, but didn't watch too much of it.
I have not watched it yet. I need to catch up on like the middle of episode 2 and this week's episode 3, so I'm a little bit behind. But I'm looking forward to catching up this weekend.
Yeah, so there's that prerequisite story about it taking a dip. I guess like after last week's show, but I'm sitting here like, well, okay, yeah, that's kind of what happens anyway. That, you know, people tuned in for the first couple of shows, and it was like, okay, well, we see what's going on here, and then it just mellows out. So it wasn't like a big deal.
Right. I mean, you know, there's always going to be a lot of hand-wringing about these ratings until the final numbers are in and they see, oh, okay, so it did all right for an 8-episode show.
Right.
I just saw a commercial for Raw, WWE Raw for Monday. They're going to have Shawn Michaels, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, and Scott Hall on the show.
It's the 90s all over again.
Yeah, it was originally supposed to be Hall, Nash, and Hogan. And for whatever, something happened with Nash, and I forget what happened, but they had some sort of disagreement, and so he's not doing the show, so they brought in Flair and Michaels instead.
I was going to say, if they already had Sean scheduled, it'd be the Click reunion, just missing X-Pac.
Well, we can do without X-Pac.
Time for Audible at audible.com free 30-day trial. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/CodeSlitherPodcast or CodeSlither. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. For you, the listeners of Comic Book Chronicles podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Some books that you can read are Gone Girl by Gillian Flynn, What I Know for Sure by Oprah Winfrey, Glengarry Glen Ross by David Mamet, and The Maze Runner Book 1 by James Dashner. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/CodeSlither. Again, that's audibletrial.com/CodeSlither. Alrighty.
Cool.
Now to see what we all read this week.
Did everybody read Star Wars?
Yes.
No.
No.
Kidding.
That's
yes.
That's a good one to start with, Dirt.
Yes, that's an excellent one. I figured that we would start with that. That is the big release this week.
Because it was awesome.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
It was very good. It was very good. I was tempted to make this my click of the week, you know, just hands down. But there's another book out this week that took the cake for me.
Yep.
But this was very, very good.
The one would say the Force was strong with this one.
Yep.
You know, and here's the thing. Dark Horse launched their ongoing Star Wars, you know, what, 2 years ago before they found out they were losing the license. And I read, like, the first couple issues of that and then ended up dropping it. And I wasn't really into it. And I read this one, and I really enjoyed it. And I had to sit and think, like, why did I like this one so much more than the Dark Horse one? And I realized because this one is much more, I want to say reader-friendly, like casual reader-friendly, whereas the Dark Horse one starts out and it's like, after the Battle of Yavin and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I don't remember which one was the Battle of Yavin. Like, you know, to me that doesn't mean anything, you know? Whereas
I was about to say, there are listeners and viewers out there who are screaming blasphemy. But anyway, go on, nerd.
But yeah, whereas this one was much more of a, the location really didn't matter. It was more about the characters. It's not firmly set. It's not, you know, like someone's tracking the Star Trek star dates. You know, how much time has passed between episode 481 and, you know, and that novel?
Oh, yeah,
and
blah, blah, blah. I got some more screams of blasphemy just now, but go on.
You got to reference Trek when someone's talking about wars, otherwise you can't get the fight started. But yeah, I mean, it was really written much more like if you're someone that you enjoyed the movies, of course you grew up with them, whatever, but you haven't read every novel, you don't buy every toy, you haven't seen every cartoon series, you know, you're just a fan of the characters and the situations, it's much more open, yeah, and accessible for those types of readers.
That.
So I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I found myself really, after reading it, going, okay, I want to read the next one. Like,
I said the exact same thing, yeah.
What's funny is that my notes tell me, you know, one of the first things I thought after I read this was, I actually want to go back and watch episode 4 again. I want to go back and watch it now.
Wait, you
this
don't
actually
do that?
Kind of kindled my interest in watching the movie. And I give Aaron, I give Cassidy, you know, as a team. And is it Laura Martin on colors?
Yes.
I give the entire creative team on this book, you know, many, many kudos for instilling that kind of interest in the series again, because I am exactly what Dirt was just describing. Someone who wasn't into the expanded universe. I dabbled in, you know, like a little bit of expanded universe Star Wars here and there. But otherwise, you know, my understanding of the story was pretty much based around the movies, more so the second trilogy than the first. And reading this book made me just kind of, you know, it recaptured the wonder that I had watching episode 4 for the first time and the second and third time. And, you know, it was very true to character, you know, and you could almost hear and see the characters saying these things. I think Cassidy's art really helps with that too, you know, and you almost hear their voices coming out at you when you're reading the book.
It felt like I was reading the movie, like, it was like the movie, you know, in comic book form, which is simple to say, but a lot of times the transition isn't always as flawless as it was here.
Yeah,
true enough.
And I know I haven't read Astonishing X-Men, so I haven't read many comics of John Cassidy's except for him kicking off the Uncanny Avengers run.
Right.
His art here was great.
Yeah, and then I guess that bears saying, I don't know if the same thing happens as what used to happen is he needs a lot of lead time because he's kind of methodic
He's on the slower side. He does need some lead time. What I find interesting in this, and again, you know, I'm referring to my notes, the vehicles drawn in this, I think Cassidy may be benefiting from modern technology and some of the vehicle renderings being done with computer graphic, you know, generated by computers to assist him in creating what looks like a very authentic rendition of, you know, AT-ATs and the Millennium Falcon and just, you know, hordes of stormtroopers. I don't know about the stormtroopers so much, but definitely, you know, like a TIE fighter factory that makes an appearance in this book. It's I think it's a great boon. It's a great assist to an artist who is on the slower side to have these models, these models of vehicles and other technical things to kind of work around. You know, otherwise he'd be lost in all the line work, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yes, definitely. I sent a tweet out today saying, you know, between Ant-Man number one and now Star Wars number one, Marvel's off to a good start this year as far as new series I'm looking forward to each month now.
Agreed.
Here's the one pitfall that they have to worry about is the cliffhanger at the end of this issue is obviously a red herring of some kind, because there is an episode 5, there is an episode 6. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're working on an episode 7 with Luke Skywalker's in it. So obviously, the end of this issue, it's like, oh my gosh, something may actually happen. Well, you know it's not.
Yeah, probably
so
not.
That's,
I'm going back to look now because I don't remember what it was.
That's what I always felt. Another thing that I felt was the problem with the Dark Horse.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're always in this mortal danger. Like, oh my gosh, can they survive? Well, of course they do because they made another movie. You know what I mean? So that's the one thing. They're going to have to focus more on the characters and, you know, the fun of the situations and not, you know, are they going to survive this encounter? Because you know they do.
Yeah. Although they could play off of that fact also, because, like, that whatever happens at the end could be like, well, look, we know this is going to happen, but we're just going to just tease this out here. Like, just throw this thing of us out here for a little bit and then pull them out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, then. So everybody liked it.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
So definitely it'll be up there for clicks of the week, I'm assuming. But we shall see at the end. Who wants to go next?
I'm sorry. Real quick, breaking news. Weird Al Yankovic will voice Batman's villain in a new animated film.
Hmm. What film? Wow.
Hang on. I'm looking through right now. You will be the doll maker.
Is that the Batman and
Robin? The Batman and Robin, yeah. Wait, yeah, it's Batman versus Robin.
Okay.
That'll be fun. But new.
What else we got? Do we want to do Avengers 40?
Yes.
We can knock out two of the three books I read this week. Just because I only read three books from this week doesn't mean I wasn't doing any reading for the entire week, people. It's all of last week I was trying to get caught up on. So I believe Jonathan Hickman said in some interviews that, you know, starting with this issue, this is where everything starts to, as they say, the shit hits the fan, you know, leading up to Time Runs Out and Secret Wars.
Yeah, I was about to say, if you noticed at the top of the cover, not only is there a Time Runs Out banner, there's also the first, I think, appearance of the Secret Wars banner at the top of a book.
Yeah. Let me look at
just
that.
Just go ahead and say it. This, rightly so, has shades of New Avengers in its tone because of, well, it's mostly to do with them anyway, but they're just bringing everything together so nicely. And,
you all right there, Roddy?
Yes. I'm saying because I love this book because of the little the thing with T'Challa and Namor. Mm-hmm. I love that part of the book, which, you know, that has been one of my favorite parts of New Avengers.
I thought that Tim had some great comments on the in our show notes, and I wanted to just address some of his questions because I had the same thoughts, and I just sort of glossed over them because I had so much fun with the parts of the book that Roddy was just referencing.
Oh my god! Yeah.
Such as what court is Cap going to take the Illuminati to prosecute them for their alleged crimes? What crimes have they committed, really?
That's personal. That's just personal. You know, that has nothing to do with any kind of real...
Excuse me, living tribunal. You know, we're going to prosecute.
It's a valid question.
Like, they did him dirty. He's just pissed, which I guess rightly so, but, you know, that's all that is, I think. I don't know. There's... Get you right. I don't think they could take him. It's not like you're going to just take him anywhere and be like, yo, we're going to just try him. Like, okay, for what? Yeah. Like, you saved everybody. And
try him for genocide of
others.
Billions of people on other
planets. Who's the jury going to be?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, but here's the thing. They're going to be like, well, we saved Keith Urban
and
what?
Jennifer Lopez and Harry Connick Jr.
American Idol.
The cast of Ocean's 12 and 13.
That's right.
Oh, jeez.
No, one of my favorite, like, you know, what was so great, there were so many great highlights from this book. One of my favorite scenes was when, you know, Namor sort of, you know, bares his soul a little bit. He's like, you know what, I was wrong about this. And then, you know, Cap is saying, when I say Cap, I mean Steve Rogers. I don't mean Fal Cap.
Right.
So Cap is saying, well, you're all going to turn yourselves in, right? And he says, T'Challa, you're going to turn yourself in. He's like, hell to the no. Like, and I'm like, that's right. You tell him.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, everybody else is like, yeah, sure, I'll do what I got to do and this and that and the other. T'Challa's like, nope. Just, okay.
Well, because Namor's regret is not that he destroyed the first world. It's that he built a cabal and basically filled it with people that he really couldn't trust and couldn't...
Control.
You know, control is not really the right word, but that goes you know, goes along with the trust. It was just people that really weren't worthy of being in that situation.
So about Maximus' hands blowing off? Getting blown off?
Yeah, so not to spoil anything, but Maximus appears here because he's part of the Cabal, but in, I believe, the last issue of Inhuman, or... Actually, not the last, because they've been doing their stupid Axis tie-ins that have kind of taken the book off its original journey. But the issues that focus on Black Bolt and Maximus, it ended with Maximus losing his hands, I thought. But we see him here, and he's fine.
Yeah,
and
we know got this gloves on.
This isn't this is in the future, yeah, and that issue is in the past/present. So what's the deal?
Yeah, he could have built him some new hands. He's smart.
That's right. He is Maximus.
Well, this is 8 months later, right? So
right.
Thor has some sort of crazy cable arm. Maybe he's got some cyborg hands. I mean, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I feel like this I'm going to get disappointed in a couple of issues, though, because now that I'm thinking, I thought about this earlier, the stuff that happens to the Cabal in this issue, with specifically one or two people, may not have the finality that...
That's kind of what I thought, is that as cool as this was, nothing in this issue is going to stick, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they locked them over there and they blew up the planet so they're all dead, right? No, of course not.
Of course not.
These characters are not dead, so.
Yeah.
Right, but it was just done so well, you know? It was done so well.
Doesn't mean it can't be fun, though.
Exactly. I enjoyed the execution of the story, and that really, you know, that really says so much about comics nowadays that sometimes we don't even, you know, we don't appreciate a well-executed story.
Yeah.
And I am absolutely loving the way the story is coming, you know, is tying up.
Yeah. At the outset of that, I did this, the quote unquote, I did this to you moment, you know, that would have just, if that would have just been it, you know, then that would have been great. But I know that's not the case. But potential click of the week.
Cool. I've already made mine.
Plus,
this issue of Avengers, maybe, but not the other issue of Avengers that came out this
week. No. Well, let's go ahead and get to that.
Give your quick thoughts on Avengers, whatever, 30-something point.
34.2. It was unnecessary. There's probably going to be another one with Night Mask, but it was still a decent read. It just wasn't necessary. There you go.
I don't know if it was completely unnecessary. What I was thinking is that it's just an odd release in the midst of time runs out. You know, it does flesh out the new Star brand a lot more than what we've seen so far. But did we really need it? No. Is it probably going to be clogging up back issue bins for a while? Yes. So
to me, this felt like this would have been the Star brand one shot that nobody would have bought. So they made it a point two, so they could say, no, it's part of the ongoing series. You have to read it.
True enough.
And that's why I think it's going to
really
be
just a point kind three. Of cash grab, pointless, throwing out there thing.
I do like that new universe callback cover.
I couldn't get into the artwork on this one. Everybody had two faces. They had two faces, and it was one either listening intently or screaming with their mouth wide open. And it didn't matter if they were saying, hand me that bag of groceries, or oh my gosh, we're all going to die. They had that same mouth wide open screaming face.
Sam Humphries wrote this, right?
Yeah.
Right, but who did the art? That's a good question.
Bengal.
Yeah. Let me flip through it while y'all talking.
I mean, I've never heard of this particular artist before, but I definitely noticed a weaker art, you know, a weaker pencil art job on this book.
I actually kind of like the art.
Traitor.
Yeah, I'll flip through that.
Wait, the artist's name is Bengal, as in Bengal Tiger?
Yeah.
I think he's kind of a popular artist, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
What else we got?
Looks like he did Avengers. Wait, he did a Lobo, and everything else has been stuff you've probably never heard of.
Okay.
Yeah, you remember Bengal. They did that song, Walk Like an Egyptian.
Those were the Bengals.
Oh, my mistake. Sorry. I got confused.
Now that song's going to be stuck in my head, damn it.
You're welcome.
You're just lucky I haven't followed through on, it's not a resolution, but a goal to integrate a mixer into our into the sound effects for the show. And, you know, imagine me building a library with Walk Like an Egyptian.
You can make your own soundboard?
Yeah.
There's been a lot of restraint around here with that, so.
That's what we got.
Anyone read any DC this week?
I believe Dirt did.
Couple books.
What you got?
Let me flip over here.
I did not read any DC. I'd intended to read Grayson this week.
You read a New 52, Future's End, right?
Yep, Future's End. All right, so we had a couple of revelations here in Future's End. First up, the character known as 50 Sue, who it looked like was probably Darkseid's daughter, it turns out probably isn't. Looks like she is some sort of genetically manipulated test tube baby with DNA from all over the universe mixed together in order to create this superpowered being. So she may, in fact, have a little bit of DNA of just about every superhero mixed in her. So that may be why she has all those powers, but it looks like she was genetically made in a lab. She's not Darkseid's daughter. So there's another mystery of the New 52 yet unsolved, is Darkseid's daughter. The other thing was Batman had been abducted by Brother Eye and made into this cyborg monster thing with Joker. Mm-hmm. So a new Batman appeared, and it looked like that was probably going to be Tim Drake. Well, Tim Drake appears, and Batman's watching him from on top of the roof. So Batman is somebody else. So there's another mystery of who the new Batman is in Future's End. So it looked like it was going to be Tim Drake. It's not Tim Drake, so who could it be?
And I am completely, completely lost. Wow.
But, I mean, those were really the two big things that came out of this issue. Otherwise, there's a lot of talking.
All right. Let's see. What did we read? What did some how about Miles Morales, Ultimate Spider-Man number 9. I see. I read that. Dirt read that. Rod, you read it?
No.
All right. Well, I see from Dirt's notes that I'm inclined to agree. It is a slower flashback story. I don't even know if it. I think it's meant to kind of give weight. You know, I think the slowing of the pace is meant to help give weight to the revelation. And the last page really does. You know, the next issue teaser kind of shows you that, you know, the action's about to ramp up again. But I think this issue and last issue were pretty valuable in the telling of Miles Morales' story, and it really does flesh out a little bit more about, you know, where he's coming from, and it's helpful to know where his father's coming from. I noted that this was kind of a twist on the old 616 origin for Richard and Mary Parker. You know, before
my real criticism is the fact that they did the flashback with the last issue, and then at the end of the issue they come back to, you know, the modern time. They leave the flashback and they're back in regular time. So I was ready for something
modern time story.
Yeah, something to happen. Mm-hmm. And instead they open this and they go back into the flashback, as opposed to if they had just ended the last issue still in the flashback, then you would expect this one to open there. So just kind of, instead of the story progressing, it just feels like it's stalling there for a whole nother issue. And I mean, I enjoyed the artwork, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed the story of the flashback. Just, I was ready for something to actually happen. And of course, you've got the misleading cover, gimmick going on here. What you see on the cover has really nothing to do with what's inside the book. So that just kind of, you know, took me out of it a little bit. I was disappointed as far as that goes. But it's not to say that it's somehow a terrible book and you have to avoid it at all costs or anything like that. Just it's not really what it looked like it was going to be, and just somewhat disappointed by that.
No, I can definitely see where you're coming from on that. Right, what else? Wait, I see. Rod, you read Shield number 2?
I did read Shield number 2.
What'd you think?
This was kind of cool, actually.
Wasn't it fun?
It was very fun, that's what I was about to say. What happened? Oh, yeah. I'm digging what they're doing here, or at least with this one. I don't know if this is going to be an ongoing thing, but this was pretty much a kind of a one-shot deal. You have Ms. Marvel, Kamala, comes in as S.H.I.E.L.D. agents are undercover at her school, apparently. So that's where she gets tied into this. You see a nice little nerd out between her and Coulson, you know, and another touching bonding moment with her and Gemma, and we get a slightly bit about Gemma's background, which I believe you touched on.
Yeah, I know that they touch on this on her origin very, very briefly in the episodes with Donnie, when they're doing the episodes around the S.H.I.E.L.D. Science Academy. And, right. you know, they expanded on it just enough that, you know, we see more of a connection to the Marvel 616. And you know, you can even see the connections to things that exist in the Marvel cinematic universe as well. But what I loved about this was I liked Wade's the voice that he had for Kamala Khan. I also liked his the sense that you know that Coulson would be kind of, maybe I don't have the best grasp of Coulson's character in the Marvel U. I think I have a better idea of what he is in the cinematic universe. So maybe the whole geeking out thing over villain tech came off a little strong for me. But I thought it was I'd like the interaction between him and, like you said, between him and Ms. Marvel.
Well, yeah, and it kind of does touch back to that, because if you think about the movies, you think there have been points in at least Avengers, you know, where they talk about his trading cards, you know, stuff, and I think even in bits of the show, they have even touched on his, you know, his love of certain heroes or whatnot. So yeah, you can kind of translate that to being him being, you know, all into what's going on to what's going around him with the heroes. Makes sense. But the only thing was, like we said last time with S.H.I.E.L.D. 1, it just didn't seem like they were kind of tying it to the other Coulson that's in Secret Avengers that much. Right. Which, right. Now, at this point, doesn't really matter.
Right, because Secret Avengers is ending, no?
I don't know.
It's rumored that nothing has actually been announced for cancellation yet.
Okay. The one thing as a viewer of the TV show that I'm kind of looking forward to seeing is I saw the teaser at the end of the book for the third issue, and I see that I don't know, obviously, you know, you don't get much from a one page image, but I don't know if we're going to see the entire Coulson team, or at least the ones that are, you know, established in the book so far, if we're going to see them working as a team just yet. I guess what we're seeing right now are like teams of two. You know, maybe we'll get that going forward. You know, we get like the main, you know, like the two agents and maybe like some backup
hero.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's kind of nice that we at least get Fitz and Agent May. I want to see Agent May more.
Yeah, I got a friend that she'll probably be the next one up the bat, because and even in S.H.I.E.L.D. 1, they were like all of them were there, but they just didn't really do go into, you know, in depth with any of them. So I'm guessing this is probably what they're going to do. There's like, well, Coulson's going to be with one or two of them, and then they're going to highlight that one or two, the one or two that they
need
for right now until they get established.
Gotcha. That's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
How they rewrote Agent Coulson's, at least Marvel Comics origin, to fit more to the TV show.
Yeah. Like I said, it's worked out that way.
Right. The thing is, this book was fun. I'm fully confident in handing the book to someone and say, look, you know what? You want to read something fun? Here, you know? Obviously, yeah, you know, it doesn't help to, you know, reference a couple of like deep, you know, Marvel trivia and Marvel nerd items, but, you know, it's not necessary to know that to enjoy the book.
Which was one cool thing about it. And also, now that I'm thinking about it, this has the makings of a team-up book, just veiled as a S.H.I.E.L.D. book.
Right.
And that's kind of one of the things that people have been wanting out of the show. It was like, well, why aren't there not more heroes showing up with S.H.I.E.L.D., even though it's a, you know, show called Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and not Heroes of whatever. But this is what this book seemed like it's going to be in the long run.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's not like they've ran any missions without a hero, at least so far, without a hero so far.
Right.
So, good stuff. What else we got? Hey, Dirt, did you read Star Trek number 40?
I did, actually. I forgot to put it on the list. We got the end of our big crossover happening, and basically what it turns out to be is these, I don't know what you'd call them, these spirit entities that have been showing up fighting the prophets from Deep Space Nine are actually from the universe where the Q reside, and they reside in a, you know, higher dimension. And the way you can think of it is, you know, we're in the third dimension. If there was a being that lived in like the second dimension, you know, we would be able to look and see everything that exists in their world because we're in a higher plane. So the Q lives in a higher plane above our universe. That's why he can see everything that we're going to do. He can manipulate everything. He knows what's going to happen with everybody. But in his universe, he can't you know, have that control over everything, because that's the universe in which he exists, and that's right. where these things come from. And so these things are trying to kill everything else in that dimension, and Q actually says that there are several different, you know, beings, different races, whatever, within that dimension. And
right, so they're in space.
Right. And so the wormhole right next to Deep Space Nine is kind of, you know, a tear in the fabric of reality. And so the prophets actually tie in somehow with that universe, crossing over into, you know, the main Star Trek universe. And so Q somehow needs to, because he knows that Kirk is a loose cannon, and he, you know, is always able to come up with some sort of weird way of solving whatever problems. So all of this has been a manipulation to get Kirk around the prophets in the wormhole in the hopes that he'd be able to find some way to stop these other dimensional beings from basically wiping everybody out in his own home dimension. And so it's one of those, like, so it's so convoluted, but it's Star Trek. So what it basically comes down to is, you know, Q and Spock have a conversation that's like two panels long and explains everything, you know, and it makes total sense when you're reading the story, but then you try to explain it to somebody else and you just, you heard how horribly I just fumbled through it. So it plays out much better in the book than me trying to recap it for everybody. But it's again, because it's Q and he has the ability to manipulate things and play with things. He talks about the fact that this other time period that they're in this future, you know, Deep Space Nine, following after, you know, this new movie universe, is actually a different timeline, and that these people exist and this universe in which they live exists, even though it's different. And after he says that, there's kind of this wink and this nod, and Q makes an appearance in another part of the Star Trek universe to finish off the book. And it's one of those fans of the series who are upset that they reset the timeline with the new movies will be happy with where Q ends up at the end of this book, because it just kind of reinforces the fact that in the Star Trek universe, you go back and you change time, you're actually, you know, shifting the universe, and that old timeline still exists. So it, besides it being a wink and a nod to fans of the series by bringing in Deep Space Nine, there's also some other winks and nods as part of the series that may in fact lead to something else happening in the expanded Star Trek universe with the IDW comics. So it really is... if you're, you know, any type of fan of Star Trek on any level, whether it be the original series, the new movies, Deep Space Nine, Next Generation, I don't know about Voyager or Enterprise, either, you know, the two redheaded cousins that came to live at the end of the series, but it really is worth getting this series, and it's 6 issues, so you know they're going to collect it in a book here in a month or so.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I may, in fact, when I go to C2E2 or one of the cons this year, I may pick up that trade just to have it on my shelf.
I'm looking forward to that trade, because it's just, I think we, you know, I probably have access to these issues, but I'd like to see them collected and just sit and read them in one or two sittings. I'm looking forward to this particular read as a collected edition.
Yeah,
you know, just based on your recommendations, sir.
Yeah, it really was a good, fun series. I really enjoyed it.
And the resolution, as you said, was very well done. It's like, you know what? Hey, sure, that would be a way that they would handle that. You know, because going into it, I wasn't really sure. I was like, okay, what are they going to do with this? And then when they got to that panel with Q and Spock, I was like, oh, yeah, there you go.
Star Trek and Star Wars out on the same day.
Doing and well. They're both fantastic. You're allowed to like both of them.
Yes, exactly. You are.
Exactly. And if you're a fan of, I guess if you're not a fan of the way... Well, no, this still wouldn't make you that much of a fan. I'd say if you were a fan of the way DS9 ended, this is probably what's not going to change that much.
Mm.
But it was still kind of a callback to that in a certain, you know, certain way to think about it.
But it's also, again, showing another, you know, mirror universe type of reality where, you know, they've already established, because they went to the mirror universe several times throughout the series.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just you go back and you change time and the whole universe changes. It's you're actually shifting to a, you know, parallel reality. And so the fact that they keep it as someplace you can go back to and revisit is something that's really nice, because then they can tell different types of stories where they can revisit those characters and revisit those timelines. And it all still exists. It's all still real, you know, they can go back in time and change Kirk and Spock and make these new movies that are completely different. You know, Khan is completely different in the movies than he was in the original movie. But, you know, the original Khan still exists out there. You know, the Ricardo Montalban Khan, his world still happened. Like, it still makes sense. It's still real. And that's one thing that I think Star Trek does well.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, much better than Grant Morrison's Multiversity.
I'm so glad you said that.
He said it, not me. What else we got?
I will say quickly, Deep State number 3 came out. This is the series that's kind of like a twist on The X-Files, where you're actually following the guys who are trying to cover up the horrible things that have happened. This issue is the action issue. You know, the first issue you had your introductions, the second issue was kind of your explanations of what the evil thing is that they're facing, and then this was the issue where people start getting shot and cars start getting crashed and the city is in flames and, you know, all everything starts crumbling around them. There isn't really a whole lot of exposition and explanation going on this one, but it does kind of follow, you know, the trends of the arc, and it is setting up for what looks to be the finale. I think this is a 4-issue series, and if so, then it's definitely playing that up in the way this issue ends leading into the next one. I'm still enjoying it. It's still a good read. Still recommend it.
What about, let's hear about Daredevil number 12.
Sure. Am I the only one that read it?
Probably.
Yeah, that sucks. So this was actually a pretty satisfying end, even though the swerve, the twist in this issue wasn't, you know, completely surprising. You know, given what happened in the last issue, you know, it's a swerve on a swerve, but it wasn't all that surprising. But it was actually a well done story in terms of where Daredevil is right now in terms of his identity and his Matt Murdock's law career in California and just what and the supporting characters that are involved in his life right now. This was, I think, a well done story. Seeing it's a 3-issue arc with Stuntmaster involved was actually pretty well done. I think I wasn't a fan of it in the middle, but I think the way it ends makes it a satisfying read. You know, there's not much else to say. I think we're about to get to the final arc in Wade and Samney's run on Daredevil. So this issue, you know, while good, I'm still sort of waiting to see how Wade and Samney end up. This is probably, you know, in the big picture, is this an arc that you could skip and still make it to the end of, you know, and still feel like you got a good Wade and Samney story in Daredevil? Yeah, you could probably skip this, but, you know, I thought it was pretty good. And like I said, this issue brings together the story and kind of picks up or carries that second issue where I wasn't all that thrilled with where the story was going.
Alrighty.
What do you have for us, Roddy?
Well,
let's... Hey, you read Silver Surfer number 8, Roddy?
I did read Silver Surfer number 8.
Were you going to mention something else? I apologize.
No, it's okay. Well, that's good, that one, because, let's see. Yeah, this, I finally got caught back up with this book. It's been a pretty decent read. You know, it's been fun for the most part. You know,
the art.
Yeah, definitely that. You know, with Slack.
All Red
writing and All Red's art. So here we have, you know, Silver Surfer trying to be nice to Dawn. You know, it lets her control Toomey, the board that she has named, which I continue to think is funny.
Oh, and that's one of the best parts of this, to be perfectly honest. I just think it's so ridiculous, and every time you see it in print. See, it's not so much when you hear it, you know, like, you know, say this was actually an animated series or even live action, and you heard it, you'd be like, oh, okay, but to see it in print is even funnier.
Yeah, and indeed. Unfortunately, this book kind of takes a turn, though, because, so Dawn takes control of the board, and they end up smacking into this planet where there are a bunch of refugees, or survivors, let's say, excuse me, not refugees, but survivors from other planets, and it takes them a minute to find that
they
out.
They might as well be refugees.
Well, yeah, but...
They're basically the last sons and daughters of their respective planet.
Right. Who, at first, did not know who, upon meeting with the Surfer and Dawn, did not know who it was until...
Well, he was depowered or desilvered.
Exactly. And until that comes out, and then Dawn finds out, finds out a little bit of backstory on the Surfer, and that kind of changes their dynamic just a slight... Well, it seems like it's going to change their dynamic just a little bit.
I mean, I was about to say, the big thing here is, spoiler alert, well, there's two big things. One, you have to understand, going into what Roddy and I were just talking about, Dawn Greenwood had zero notion, zero ideas of what the Silver Surfer actually was, who he had been, what connection he had to the Earth.
And he'd never really been too upfront about talking about it, so...
Exactly. So this turns into a big revelation, what, 8 issues into the series? Whereas, you know, in most previous incarnations of the Surfer, previous volumes or whatever, his backstory is pretty upfront. You know, most people know who the Surfer is. They know what he's done. You know,
because you have this person who has no knowledge of him or too much else around her outside of where she was when, you know, at the beginning of the series, you know, you kind of have to call that back out.
Right. And I'm sorry, I jumped in there to mention that part, but I know what you were getting to. The second big thing is this.
Yes, the second big thing is that it sets up something, a appearance at the end that's going to happen that happened at the end of this book.
I mean, I'll ring the spoiler bell, but it's on the damn cover for the next issue.
You know what? If you know Silver Surfer, you know his backstory. You know who's going to show up at some point.
Right. That's right.
That's what you got to say.
That's right.
But like I said, it was a good, fun read, and I was kind of curious as to the way that part, I mean, how that part with Dawn and the Surfer is going to play out, which you know is going to get resolved, but,
right.
You
know. Like, isn't it funny how Slott, you know, what Slott does with this issue, with this book, especially with Dawn Greenwood, is he sticks in these cute and quirky scenes which are just like, you know, just kind of a great change of pace in the superhero comic book world. And I enjoyed this book for that. And, you know, to see this come back now, or to see this particular character come back into the Silver Surfer world is obviously not unexpected or completely expected. And to see this particular character interaction between the Surfer and this character almost through the eyes of Dawn Greenwood is going to be pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. So we shall see how that goes.
Yep. How about Guardians 3000 number 4? I know you read that too.
Yes, I still love that book, man.
It's so much fun.
It is. It's very much. This is the OG Guardians, if anyone's not familiar. So this is not Peter Quill and them, although he is in this book.
He's in the book.
So this is the original recipe Guardians from, you know, the year 3000 and whatnot in their own time.
Original recipe.
Yeah. That's right. Or OG.
The OG, exactly.
I like the original recipe.
So this is them in their time still, you know, fighting the good fight. And time is messed up, which I assume is going to have shades of what's going on in, you know, time runs out, but they're not really calling that out as such. So we have this character named Gina that can see the little slips in time and whatnot. I mean, all this issue is pretty much at the last issue, their ship gets blown up and they got separated, and we got to see Charlie and Yondu on one end and with Gina on one end. This issue we see, we get a little bit of backstory, a little bit more backstory on Vance Astro.
I thought that was a great way to weave in Vance Astro's origin for people who are not as well-versed on original Guardians of the Galaxy. I thought that was a great way to weave that in, because even though I was familiar with it, it was a great way to refresh my memory.
Right. Some of the stuff that was even brought out was like, it could be implied, because you never really saw that stuff before, but at the same time, you knew something like that had to happen for him to get to where he is now.
Exactly.
But the rest of the issue goes that they got picked up by Peter Quill. And, him and Martin X, and I guess, and Starhawk, him, Martin X, and Starhawk, they got picked up by, Quill at the end of last, or near last issue, so they're trying to get to, wherever they're trying to get to.
No, no, no. I think you've got a little bit backwards. No, I could be wrong. I thought it was Charlie 27, Gina, and Yondu.
Yondu, yes. Yes. And, well, wait. Yes, you're right. You are absolutely right.
Because it's one half. That's one half of the team. The other half of the team is revealing what is going on with the Stark. The Stark is some sort of machination, and they reveal it in this issue, some sort of machination set into motion by, obviously, Anthony Stark, Tony Stark, who we know better as Iron Man. And I thought it was funny that the Stark here is very reminiscent of what the spoiler alert again, what one of the plot points in the new Avengers movie might be.
Right.
I thought that was interesting.
And also potentially, again, calling into what's going on in Avengers now, and actually a callback to the 90s version of the 90s book, Guardians book, because they were there too in a, although they were not fleshed out like this.
Right.
Back then, as I remember.
Right.
So, but yeah.
But this is a book, look, it's four issues in. Mm-hmm. It's so much fun. Obviously, you know, for old school Guardians fans like Roddy Cat, you know, this is this is right up his alley. But for someone like me who's only casually informed about the original Guardians of the Galaxy, this book is just plain fun. It is, and I'm enjoying it. What's funny, it's interesting and fascinating that, you know, as I've, you know, kind of gone through the last couple of months, what I've really enjoyed, you know, in terms of the books that I've been reading are the ones that have been fun. Other than, look, the Avengers and New Avengers stuff, it's not fun. But, you know, we've been on it for so long. We're getting the payoff. That's what makes it fun for us. Right. But outside of those books, these other books that have just been, you know, really fun reads are what's been, you know, kind of keeping us going, or keeping me going for now. It's not like Amazing X-Men number 15 is keeping me going. That's awful.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, and for those who are familiar with the OG Guardians, this is a little harder edged, well, I guess a more battle-hardened group than the old 90s book, and even their turns in Avengers, you know, their little Avengers tie-ins. So there is that, which also kind of, you know, gives a nice little flavor to it. And at the end of this issue, we get the last Guardian that we had not seen.
Yes, one of Roddy's favorites.
She is. So I was very excited to see that happening. They redesigned her a little bit, but we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, I'm excited to see this book keep going. I am. I'm pleasantly surprised by this book. I'm definitely excited to see it going.
All right.
Tim, I see you read one other book.
Yes, all new Captain America number 3.
Let's talk about that.
So it's mostly Falcon Cap versus Sin, the Red Skull's daughter story. And at least from Sin's point of view, she teases that the Red Skull may have had something to do with Sam Wilson's... Not origin, but part of his origin.
Well, that's kind of played up. Right, exactly. Yeah. He did have a role even in the original origin, you know, of Sam Wilson the Falcon. But I think that the twist that she's trying to put in, spoiler alert, is that she's insinuating that the Red Skull had a lot more to do with the choices and the things that the choices that Sam Wilson made and the things that he's done since his introduction as a character.
I guess I need to go back and see what Red Skull originally had to do with his origin.
I can tell you the real right now, but
they do go into it in the book a little bit. You know, they kind of gloss over it, but they summarize it.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was the part that she was saying was a surprise or that was already well-known knowledge.
So well, I kind of wonder whether they were going to call back to that if that was the case. Because if you're talking about, because I hadn't read this book, but if they are calling back to that part where people have kind of had issue about at one point or another, then that's
interesting. Well, they've altered it slightly because they've made him, you know, and I'm not really spoiling anything, Roddy. Are you reading this book, by the way, Roddy? Like on the regular?
I forgot it was out this week, but yeah, I am reading it.
Oh, okay. So then I won't spoil too much, but they have changed Sam Wilson's day job.
Oh, okay.
And, but that's really, you know, that's not a big deal, but ultimately, one of the reasons why he finds himself on that island. So, that's slightly different, but actually, no, not slightly. It's pretty different, but,
gotcha. Yeah.
But, you know, that's what's different about the origin so far. But then I won't spoil too much about it. You know, I'll give you a chance to read it. I like that this is, you know, exploring what makes Sam Wilson a good candidate to be Captain America. But I'm still not 100% on board with where Remender's going with this, especially with some of the supporting cast. I like the fact that he's revisiting Sin, the Red Skull's daughter. You know, making her a prominent or reestablishing her as a prominent member of the revamped Captain America Rogues Gallery. You know, seeing her come back after what was it, Fear Itself, that she was a big player in.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, you know, I could barely, listen, as an acknowledged Marvel zombie, I could barely remember that now. I was like, what was she in again? Fear Itself? You know what I mean? So, you know, obviously a fairly forgettable limited series and crossover. So it's kind of nice to see her back in familiar confines of a Captain America book.
And I'm surprised that they didn't touch on the big shocking ending from last issue.
They did in passing, yeah.
But
they
did in passing. I can already put in my notes. Put in my notes what could, you know, change that. So I don't expect that to stick.
Mm.
Of course.
Of course, you know, because there is a to be continued at the end of this book.
Yes.
Eminem's art is very good in this. It's always very good. It's always very good, but it was very good in this issue.
Oh, two quick notes I want to throw out there.
Shoot.
Wolverine's number two, Dawkins survives, so that book's a failure on the one thing that would have made it interesting. And all new Ultimates.
You mean it's not canceled yet?
This is the final issue of all new Ultimates. So.
Oh, that's a great cover. I never even bothered to open it. That's a great cover.
Yeah, well, luckily this nightmare can be put behind us.
Oh, it's the final issue.
Yeah.
What do you have to say about that?
You know, it's sad that Ultimate FF, that had a really great story but mediocre art, you know, disappeared into the ether, and that this book that literally nobody cared about, but it had Miles Morales to carry it, got to go to 12 issues before it finally limped off into the sunset. I have no idea what the future holds for the Ultimate Universe beyond cameo appearances in all new X-Men and Miles Morales getting his own ongoing series. Like, obviously, there has to be something more to it. They're not going to just have Miles Morales be the only thing for the Ultimate Universe, but I really have no idea what else they're going to do at this point.
What I was going to say is, you think, I mean, obviously this is all going to be resolved, or at least, you know, we'll get some form of a plan for the Ultimate Universe going forward. But do you think that, I mean, would it be so wrong if Miles Morales was the only Ultimate book out there, you know, akin to Spider-Girl, you know, Mayday Spider-Girl for a long time being the only MC2 book?
Right. My only thought is that with the Secret War crossover, or Secret Wars crossover, that he'll somehow be involved in that, you know, because that is doing that whole thing of pulling people out of different times and locations and whatever, that maybe the resolution of that will be him having some place, maybe joining the all-new X-Men and continuing on in that book, you know, who knows. I really don't see anything else in the Ultimate Universe really catching on and continuing. If you can't do it with FF and the Ultimates, then I don't know what possibly could find a foothold in the Ultimate Universe.
I guess Secret War could be the way that they can finish sliding that universe out of existence.
Yeah.
It's definitely a possibility.
I mean, it's not like people have been, like, do you remember a couple of years back where people were thinking that there was a rumor that you know, the universe was going away anyway. So, but they just decided to kind of keep it up to spite people, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know about spite.
I mean, I'm just being a little facetious about that. But still, you
know, it's spite to everyone else.
You know? So, that's funny. All right. Let's see.
Here, I got another one.
Go ahead.
Let's get to one of these, Amazing X-Men number 15.
Oh, do we have to?
Yeah, there's not much to say about it, but...
The story wasn't terrible, but the art was distracting. Go ahead.
Yeah,
does that say it all? That's awful.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, this begins Chris Yost's run. The only thing that this has cemented for me is that, Rockslide is probably the easiest character to write. I don't know that for certain.
I thought he was the highlight of the book. Because
he kind
of
was.
I laughed every time he had some, you know, he had some sort of appearance in the. It was. I thought he was well written.
Oh yeah, I mean, but it's kind of he's kind of one of those like you either don't like him or hate him because he's kind of one of those like he's definitely in there for comic relief.
Mm-hmm.
So and but at the same time, he's been the one that's been written similarly, which like I said, that's why I'm saying he's kind of the easiest one to write because like you just stick him in the situation and let him say something that's completely off the wall for the situation, and mm-hmm. there you have him whether he does anything else or not. But that aside, so we get the beginning of. The Sidorak arc. So Sidorak is back on Earth in one component. Colossus kind of somehow senses this mm-hmm. and sends the team after it. There's a little argument between him and Storm about whether he should go or not because of whether, you know, they could trust him about it. And, of course, Wolverine gets called up, you know.
I mean, that was one of the best parts of the book, you know, the confrontation, you know. Yeah. And what I love about this is it was heavily... It definitely explained something that had been troubling me for a while in terms of just, you know, Colossus and how he's been written and what's been going on in his personal story over the last, you know, in terms of our chronology, 4 or 5 years and all the different possessions and the different, you know, dark influences that have been on him. And
him flipping with Domino.
Exactly, that too. And ultimately, you know, it was great to see that confronted in the story. Like, hey, you know what? We don't completely trust you right now. And, you know, you're only here based on Wolverine's word, and now he's dead. So, you know, what am I supposed to do with you? And it's kind of heartbreaking because of who gives him this talking to.
Right. But, spoiler alert, he's going to be involved at some point. So.
Of course. Of course.
Oh, we get a nice little Scarlet Witch cameo, which there was a nice little that whole section was pretty neat also.
Mm. It was amusing. I mean, it definitely set up the comedy, you know, the whatchamacallit, the comic relief aspect yeah. in the book.
Definitely. But like I said, it was not a bad read. We'll see how this art goes, you know,
I definitely hope that the art picks up a little bit. I just thought there were some just awkward looking faces, awkward looking poses, you know, yeah. and even the layouts were sometimes on the awkward side. So, like,
there was a couple of times especially when Peter was talking to Storm and he was, mm-hmm. you know, in his costume but you know, depowered, like he was right. looking kind of crazy then, almost anemic.
Yes.
Because, yeah, and I'm thinking about that now. You're right.
Just what I was going to say is just take a look at the page. I'm looking at it now. The page where Peter's talking to, what is this character's name? Trance?
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know who that is, but, you know, just doing very Shadow Cat-like things. And there's one pose at the end of the page that you, when you see it now, you'll be like, what on earth was this artist doing?
Oh, when she leaves?
Yes!
Yeah.
What the heck is that? That's just an awful panel. That is an awful looking panel.
Yeah.
So, you know, my notes basically just reminded me to, you know, reminded me to say on the air that, yeah, this book is very much ready to be cut from my physical pull list. You know, Roddy has mentioned over and over again that this is the arc I need to stick through and see if this is something that's worth continuing to buy. This is pretty much going to be it for me unless, you know, this story is really going to, you know, hit a real home run and Yost decides to stay on. If he's going to be just doing this one arc and then they'll be announcing another... creative team coming on, I really don't know if I'm in the mood to read an amazing X-Men book that's just, you know, telling random stories like this.
Okay.
You know?
I will probably skip it as big of an X-Men fan I am. And now I see myself reading less and less X books. they canceled all new X-Factor, which I was enjoying.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, am I reading more X books than Tim? What is going on here?
Amazing X-Men, I left when Jason Aaron left. X-Men, I left when Brian Wood left.
That's still been pretty good, though.
Yeah, I'm going to read the new arc. Right. I read Cyclops, which I read. I didn't read this week's issue, but I read last week's.
Right.
Or, yeah, last month's, I should say, I read last week. So, yeah.
All right. Well, the other side of that token is Nightcrawler number 10, if you want to go ahead and get that out of the way.
Okay.
Which, the only thing that happens here is the fight between Nightcrawler and the Shadow King concludes with help from Psylocke and Bloody Bess. Kurt finds himself, well, Kurt finds himself back where he has gone to before, let's say, for a brief moment. But
no kidding.
Pulled back out of that, yeah, but gets pulled back out of that, and then there's going to be another arc starts up after that. That continues along, so not much else to say about that. It was a decent read.
Hmm. I mean, I know that this is Nightcrawler's ending as well, correct?
Yes.
So, you know, I'm going to say that it's a crying shame that this isn't the Amazing X-Men book, that it's not Claremont and Nock doing Amazing X-Men, because this book, you know, I try to read it. I'm not a fan of this. Rod, who are these guys? The guy with the red skin and the gold suit that are the villains in this?
Oh, the like Crimson Pirates.
The recent Claremont creations. You know, the more recent Claremont creations, that is. Mm. And I'm not a fan of them, but, you know, I just like the team that Claremont and Nock have become on this book, and I wish that this was the Amazing X-Men book, and I would not. And if that were the case, I don't know if I would be so willing to drop it, because I like, you know, I just like the team. I like the teamwork that they've shown, the chemistry that they've shown as a writer and artist team on this book. The fact that it's a Nightcrawler book, I mean, this may end up being one of those things that I try to get in a trade or maybe try to track down back issues, because they're probably not going to be that hard to get. But, you know, I like this book. It hasn't quite graduated to like a weekly pull list, a monthly pull list thing for me, but I like it, and I've enjoyed reading it far more than I have Amazing. So, like I said, I wish this and Amazing were just one big book, or just one book.
Yeah, that's why I feel like that. Some of these books need to be like merged together.
Yeah, which they thought about, they probably could, because I mean, if what happens as you said earlier, that if Yost is only doing this arc and they potentially give it to somebody else, they could say, all right, hey, Claremont, you and Nock want to come and take this book over since your book is in it or something like that? They could very well do that if they thought about it.
And so, you know what? And then I think they would do a bang up job on that book.
I almost feel the same way with some of these Spider character books coming out. It's like almost oversaturating the market,
right? But at the same time,
every other decade that has to happen,
right? And what I was going to add to that is that sometimes they have to see what sticks. No pun intended, right? You know, they have to see what sticks. I want to see how that Spider-Gwen story goes beyond, you know, the fascination with the character. If they're able to tell a good story, then great. But if all it is just the fascination with the character and a great design, by the way, you know, that's half of what sold that character, is that it's a great design.
And who knows? Spider-Man might get her own book at some point.
Spider-Man.
I still say they need just a Spider team book. Put all of them in a book together. Scarlet Spider, Venom, Silk, Spider-Gwen.
Yeah.
Call it Spider Slayers.
Yeah. Did anyone read the Spider-Verse number 2?
No.
All
right. So are we in rapid fire review time?
Yes.
Are there any books left?
Yeah, I got a few, actually.
Go for it.
A couple, anyway. Wait, what do I have left? Here we go. Federal Bureau of Physics 17. After the events of last issue, we see a quantum tornado, excuse me. I don't know what I'm thinking, Star Trek, but...
because it's dominated the show. That's funny.
Yeah. A quantum tornado comes and the team has to evacuate a highway that the tornado is heading towards. Unfortunately, Adam gets caught up in it, but gets saved by Beer, and we get a nice little a physics lesson on liquids and their properties. We also get introduced, well, not necessarily introduced, but we see Adam get introduced to this smart, very smart for her own age, little girl and her mom that may or may not last past the next couple of issues. We don't know, but that presented a couple of good interactions. So the art is not, I think they're still using a guest artist because I guess Robbie Ride is doing Spider-Gwen or whatever the case may be, but the art was still pretty solid.
All right.
And what else do we have? Captain Marvel number 11.
Oh, I actually read this. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's a Christmas issue. Carol's back on Earth thanks to Lila Chaney. She's got 24 hours to do whatever it is she got there to do. We see her fighting the same villain that got fought the last issue by her entourage, her people, and with a callback to Avengers Assemble in a guest villain that comes along. We also get another guest starring Santa Claus being the Christmas issue, who kind of saved the day in more than one way, actually.
Yes, definitely.
So this,
so but it was just in time for mid-January. They did a Christmas issue.
Yes. double shipping, and whatnot.
It's all right. I'm still in the
hall early for next year.
Yeah, you know.
You know.
And that. Well, and
Dirt,
that
did you already take your Christmas tree down? Come on, really.
Yeah, are you kidding me? Everything in our house, nothing can go up before the day after Thanksgiving, and everything comes down New Year's Day.
Gotcha.
I am not allowed to put up anything early, and nothing is allowed to stay up after.
That's the way it
should be. If it was up to me,
yeah, really.
If it was up to me, the tree would go up sometime in mid-August and would come down probably around Easter.
Listen, my tree is still up. My tree is still up. I have not yet taken it down. I haven't had time. Probably start taking it down this weekend, and it'll go out for recycling, you know, midweek next week. Yes, I'm one of the later people.
Hey, my parents leave the tree up all year round because they have an alcove that they built for a TV stand back when they had a giant tube TV. Mm-hmm. Now that they have flat screens, the flat screen is over the fireplace, and they took that little alcove where they had the tube TV, and they stuck the Christmas tree in there, and they have little French doors to cover it. So then when it's Christmas time, they just open the doors, and there's the tree. It's already lit. It's got the ornaments. It's ready to go.
So is it a live tree?
No. It's artificial.
Oh, it's a fake tree. Okay. Because yeah. I was about to say, at that point, it's just a plant.
That's a remarkable tree, man.
Yeah, that's just a plant at that point, man.
No, it's decorated. It's lit. It's ready to go all year round. That's you can open funny. It up in the middle of June, and there it is, ready to go.
Nice. That's, oh, and the cover for this issue is misleading because, yeah, none of that goes
yeah,
on.
Yeah, none of that actually happens.
Hey, another one of those. It happens a lot with Captain Marvel, I see. A
couple of times, yeah.
Well, except for the Flerkin one. I like the Flerkin covers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Real quick, I did read Deathlok, which I was never a fan of Deathlok before, but Nathan Edmondson's writing this, so I figured I'd give it a try, and I really have been enjoying this series just because Nathan Edmondson, you know, he did the Activity, he's doing the Punisher, and now Deathlok he's treating as a military book, and he's basically this, you know, secret agent killer whose memories are wiped after every mission, so he has no idea what he does out in the field. But his handlers, as it turns out, are not necessarily on the right side of the law. And, you know, Deathlok and some of his missions, it's a higher priority for him to get away than for him to protect the good guys. And in fact, when a U.S. Army helicopter gets a little too close and may be able to identify him, he takes out the helicopter and kills the U.S. troops. And that's considered acceptable in order to keep him hidden. So S.H.I.E.L.D. is swooping in on his handler team and trying to track down who is actually behind the technology. But, you know, he has no idea who he is. He cannot activate his powers. It's just one of those things where he's, you know, just a normal guy until suddenly he sees the code word and it switches on, Jason Bourne style. And he just goes nuts on people. So it's really been a good series. He's facing off versus Domino in this issue. You can see she's been brought in to take him down. And it ends the issue looking like this could be the end of this version of Deathlok. It looks like the Deathlok is like this ongoing military program. Mm. And the guy in the suit is not necessarily, you know, the key of the book. So it's going to be interesting to see if what they play with at the end of this issue is what actually happens or if it's just one of those, you know, red herrings for the sake of having a cliffhanger. But it's been really good. And like I said, I never really cared for the character before, but this series at the hands of Nathan Edmondson has been really good.
Excellent, excellent. I, you know, this may end up being one of those books. I have gotten the first three issues. I'm wondering if this may end up being one of those books like Black Widow that Edmondson also writes that I may have to go back and track down back issues to fill in because.
Oh, he does point, Black Widow?
Yes.
Oh, I'm gonna have to go back and start reading that.
Punisher. Didn't he do Punisher also?
Yes.
Yeah. Punisher's great.
See, yeah. Y'all talked the Punisher, so I'm trying to go back to at least read the latest issue. And not
well, yeah, because whatchamacallit, was it last week's Punisher that was our click of the week?
Yeah.
So just as I was the point of what I was saying before about tracking down back issues is that, especially with the Edmondson books that he's written for Marvel, I've gone back and looked for physical back issues, because after I pulled the number ones and maybe even the number twos, but you start to think, okay, I have to make some budget decisions, don't necessarily need to buy all these books, but then you get into reading it and you say, well, you know what, I need to go back and track those down. Punisher is one of them. Black Widow's become that too. I wonder if Deathlok, maybe 3 or 4 issues down the road, I might be in that same boat, just trying to track it down because it's developed into a good story. I hope so.
Yeah, you could just wait, was it the 6 months or whatever, for them to show up on Marvel Unlimited.
That's true.
I always forget about that. Maybe the stuff I don't really need to read right now, I can just wait for them to show up there.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I can go back and read those first Black Widows on there and decide if I want to go with that series. I'd forgotten that it's going to be on there.
Yeah,
I just have that rolling membership to it every year, and I read it 3 times a year. I go in and look at it. It's mostly my son going in and reading all the Avengers Assemble and Marvel Adventures stuff.
And Edmondson used Domino in his Punisher run, I believe. I think she showed up in that too.
Yeah, she made a brief appearance, and then they did a Black Widow crossover.
Right.
So.
All righty.
So, clicks of the week.
Yeah, I think we're done at clicks of the week. So I've already put my click of the week up. It's on the sheet. It's for anyone who's got the link to the sheet. You can see what my click of the week is. It is Avengers number 40. I would put Star Wars number 1 as a very, very close 1A. But I enjoyed Avengers number 40 this week. It was just a great story. We've gone over the book and what the possible future ramifications are. We all understand that none of this stuff is ever going to be permanent, but I thought this was well executed.
As long as it's entertaining.
Yes, it was very well executed. And we gush about this. I feel like, oh, real quick, by the way, I'm on the fence about going to this tomorrow. There's a signing at the downtown branch of Midtown Comics for Jason Aaron and John Cassidy doing Star Wars number 1 here in Manhattan, in Manhattan. And I am on the fence about going. I don't know if I should be on the fence. I should just go and get my, get my copy of Star Wars number 1 signed.
Wonder what the crowd would be like.
I know. Maybe that'll be a turnoff. Be like, it'll be so packed. I'll be like, I need to go home. It's 6 to 8 tomorrow night, so we'll see.
I'd imagine that's probably going to be a pretty good crowd.
Yeah. They limit it to 2 items signed per person, so maybe that'll keep things moving.
I'll bet you there's already a line. There's already people in lawn chairs sitting there.
I hope
just because it's Star Wars.
Yeah. That's not that. Unfortunately, you mentioned lines outside of Midtown Comics branches because that's what happens with New York Comic Con tickets. I really hope that's not the case. If I see the line going around the block, I'm going home. So anyway, fellas, go on with your clicks of the week.
Mine is Star Wars number 1.
There you go.
Avengers was pretty entertaining also, but Star Wars was a lot of fun.
Well, I'm going to co-sign Agent 70's Avengers 40 because that book was actually that good. But I also want to give a nice little shout out to Guardians number 4. I enjoyed that.
2004, yeah.
Yeah, 2000 number 4. That was a really good book this week.
Well, in a week where Star Wars 1 comes out, I think I'm going to have to go Trek 40. Just to throw it
in. Bringing balance to the Force.
That's right. I love it.
There you go.
That is awesome.
But, this was the most satisfying thing this week. I mean, it really was. There's the fanboy in me from, being in 6th grade and Next Generation premiering on TV, and all those years you put into Deep Space Nine with the long arcs and everything and the characters. And it's great to see, all this stuff kind of come back, and it plays so well with the new, the new storyline, the new movies and everything. And Q is just always a fun character, and they just tied everything up so nicely. I'm going with Star Trek 40.
Great.
So there you go.
Nice. That's a nice array of books for Click of the Week. I think they're deserving this week.
Although, just on cover alone, though, I'm going to go with WWE. where Hulk okay, Hogan wait. Finds his black outfit.
Time out. See, now I saw that you guys are tweeting about this before the show started, and I had not yet seen this cover. That, my friend,
isn't that fantastic?
A great cover.
That was pretty good.
That is so awesome. From the lettering and the overall cover design to just what it invokes is awesome. You cannot undersell that.
What company put that up?
Super Genius. It's part of Paper Cuts.
How very 80s and 90s of that cover.
Well, that's something they've been doing. Usually it's been on the flip side. This is actually the front cover, but they usually do like a flip. You know, when you flip it over to the back side, they have done a lot of WWE superstars in these iconic comic book covers.
Right. This is obviously the cover to – it's an homage to the cover to Marvel Superhero Secret War number 8, the first appearance of the symbiote.
Yeah,
costume.
But this time, this is the actual cover, and the flip cover is, I think, what would have been the regular cover, but this one was just so good, I think they just decided to make it the main cover. And it's like, this is great. This is my Facebook my Facebook header picture, you know, whatever. Like, this is just so awesome.
That is very, very cool. Very cool. You know, seriously, for all you listeners out there, you know, whoever's got this on their Podcast Addict feed or whatever app you use or iTunes, please try to tune in, catch a live replay of this show just to see what we're talking about. Or if you could just go online and check out the cover for WWE Superstar Secret Raw. What issue number is this? Number 8?
This is number 11.
Number 11? There's 11 issues of this? Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Mick Foley and company putting in work.
Goodness.
Mick Foley's actually writing the series, so.
No kidding.
Yeah.
You have to go online, take a look at this cover. You will enjoy this. It's very, very cool.
I mean, it's one of those things. I like the cover so much, I almost want to buy one of those side-by-side comic book frames to put the Secret Wars and to put this next to it.
I don't know if I'd go that far, Dirt.
Well, yeah, but you're not in a wrestling household. In this house, perfect.
No, but in all honesty, like, this makes me want to go to, because this isn't going to be available at a smaller store. Was this available at your shop this week?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so but your store generally keeps orders.
Well, yeah, we have a subscriber actually that subscribes to this series.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
Yeah.
So what I was going to say is I intend to track this cover down. That is how much I like this. I fully intend to track a physical copy of this cover down. That is very cool.
Yeah.
That is very, very cool. Wow. That's awesome.
Did everyone get their clips of the week out?
Yep.
Cool. Alrighty. That brings us to the end of another exciting episode of Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay!
Make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at TheClickNation. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at NewsNerdsNeed. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. And Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. And go to his website, popculturenetwork.com.
Yay!
And with that, we will say goodnight, Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey!